Welcome to Inside Running Podcast for the very first episode. My name is Brady Trailful and I'm very stoked to be here for this very first episode with my co-host Julian Spence and Bradley Croker. How are we, fellas?
Well, Brady.
Going well.
Good. Good to talk running again. It was a big week in running last week and some pretty awesome feedback on the social media and the Strava and a few emails through to my inbox during the week after our episode zero show where we kind of unpacked what was going to happen on the show each week. Did you guys have anything at your end?
Plenty, actually. A lot of people, I reckon 3/4 of our run club that we have at the store listen to it. A lot of messages, a few phone calls, just like guys that run in Melbourne wanted to check in. They might have been buying a shoe off me or something and they'd say, hey, I listen to your podcast. So, yeah, it's really cool.
Some real bits of excitement too, I think. Some people generally, when I just put the photo on Instagram, a few people were kind of like stoked that the three boys were back on podcast together talking to each other. What about yourself, Brad?
I had a bit of feedback. I know the boys have been asking when the first episode's going to come out, so it'll be good to record this one and get it out as soon as possible. Looking forward to, I guess, just branching out into a bit more sort of diverse subjects, really, in terms of running rather than just talking about our own training. So it should be good.
Yeah. Well, you've kind of led me into the own trainer one straight away, even though you don't want to talk about it much. But we might start off with Julian because Julian went from one side of Australia to the other during the week and went over to represent Victoria, the big elite athlete, the 218 man. Went over to represent the state, so we might hear all about Julian's training week and how he went.
Yep, went over Team Vic I was running for on the adventure team. Rapid Ascent, the events company from Torquay. A couple of Torquay guys, Sam Maffitt and John Jacoby, they own that company. And if you ever get a chance, you should check out the Hidden Athlete podcast. They just did a really good interview with John Jacoby, who is... he's a crazy person, basically, but he's also really good at endurance sport, and he takes it to the limit. But he started this company called Rapid Ascent, and they put on adventure races, and they took a team of Victorians over to WA, to Augusta, to compete against the Western Australian team, and they also had a Queensland team of adventure races, which includes a paddle in the ocean, a swim in the ocean, a trail run and a mountain bike run. It was really fun. I went over with a couple of guys I hadn't met before. The biker and the swimmer, both young kids, 16 years old, really funny kids. It was just a hilarious weekend. The race was pretty tough in terms of we had a bit of bad luck. It was really windy. Our skier got in a collision. He got a hole in his ski, so he took on about 50 litres of water. It's pretty hard for a runner to understand that, but imagine his skis weighs 8 kilos and he took on 50 litres. So he was paddling a 58 kilo ski and trying to catch waves. It wasn't happening for him. So we ended up coming third overall and my run leg was pretty gross actually.
How many teams?
There were three teams there. So Western Australia, obviously.
And third overall.
Third overall. So a local team beat us that wasn't in the state of origin. So we came runner-up in the state of origin contest. It's pretty difficult to get logistically, these things are pretty difficult to organise. I just don't think they had the capacity to bring every state over yet. So they bring over the guys that maybe already were coming over and chuck a different singlet on them. I'm not sure.
Was there prize money?
Of course there was, Brad. He would not be going if there wasn't prize money. I'll answer that one for him.
Yeah, and the 218 man would have spent his money before he'd even raced.
Yeah.
Well, funny you should say that because I went over pretty confident. I had a look at the times from last year. Wasn't real impressive, so I thought, on paper. And then I actually got on the trail and thought, holy shit, this isn't even runnable in some parts. Like, you've got to be a fast hiker to do well here. And I it wasn't good. Came, I think I was the second fastest split, which didn't give me much money, anything, zero. I was pretty disappointed at the end, actually. I thought, that's what happens when you build, like, you get too confident, maybe a little bit cocky, and then someone just crushes you like that. Yeah, still seething on this one.
Training week leading in, like, do you back off a bit going into a interstate race like that?
Not at all. So I was pretty heavy all week. I knew I wasn't doing a long run Sunday, so I tried to build the mileage during the week and get maybe a few longer easy runs in. Session on Tuesday. At the moment, I'm running hills Tuesdays. Short, sharp stuff. Maybe a couple of longer hills, but mainly short and sharp. Trying not to get too lactic. Mainly working on power. And then Thursdays, I'm on the track again. Probably going a little. Probably running workouts or intervals that are a little longer than my hill workouts. Doing some 5K work at the moment. 5K pace stuff, maybe some 3K pace. I always start out with the intention to run maybe some 10K pace sessions, but I get a little bored, a little bit revved up and start to go too fast. The track just does that too, especially when it's crowded. The track is crazy at the moment. It's really a lot of atmosphere down there. It's a nice place to be.
Yeah, it's a good thing, isn't it, when the track's packed?
Oh, it just gets you going. Like, you just want to work hard. And sometimes those long sessions, you just don't get that real buzz that you get when you're doing like 10 400s fast with decent rest. Like, yeah, you get caught up. So, yeah, the track's on Thursday and then, yeah, just did some easy running in between.
Good, good.
It was a good week. It was fun. The first time to WA, beautiful down in that southwest corner down there. Amazing.
Yeah. That sounds pretty good. Bit of a hit to the ego for the great man, which is always good for Brad and I. So, and we're 6-7 weeks away from a track 10K against each other. How are you feeling towards that?
Oh yeah, well, stepping stone that one. I've changed my mind. That's going to be a stepping stone. So Ooh. I'll just use you as my stepping stone to the next race.
Here we go, Brad. Heard it here first. Stepping stone race.
Yeah, he's already playing it down.
Yeah, he saw that session I dropped the other day on Strava and he's getting a bit worried, I reckon.
Yeah. What session?
He doesn't like racing me over 10. Not a good track record over 10 against Trailful.
Yeah, and I guess after the hit to the ego last weekend, he's probably less confident now as well.
Gets done by a couple of young trail runners over the other side of Australia, yeah.
No, this will be fun at Steigen. I like where I'm at. I like where you're at.
Yeah. I like where Brad's at. Tell us a bit about that, Brad.
So I guess I'm sort of 17 weeks away from BWA, so I'm just really laying down the foundation so that I can, hit it pretty hard from sort of 10 to 8 weeks out. So for me, it was just a couple of easy runs on Monday, so an hour in the morning and 35 in the afternoon with some 10-second hill sprints at the end of that 35-minute run. Tuesday, got out for 8 2-minuters off a minute slow jog and felt pretty good. Like, Julian will agree with me here, like 2 minutes is that sort of sweet spot where you can run strong but not really nail yourself. So I was sort of doing those reps in, I think I averaged about 3:03s and then just jogging a minute at sort of 4:30-kilometre average. Wednesday, got up super early because I knew it was going to be a long day at school and I didn't want to do an hour 45 after work. So, I did an hour 45 out in the trails, which got me just under 25K, which felt pretty good other than the early start. Just an easy hour on Thursday. And then Friday, I was meant to do 2x6K with a K sort of float slash jog in the middle. And I went out to Stromlo cross country course and I was going to do it around the 2K loop, but I was warming up and there was a pretty aggressive magpie, so I decided against that and ended up just doing it around this 1K, 1.5K loop, which I think it's actually short. So I ended up just doing two 20-minute efforts off a 3-minute jog. And the Garmin said I was running 3:12s for the first 20 minutes and 3:10s for the second, but because it's so twisty and turny, I think it's pretty generous. So I'd say it was probably more like 320s for those efforts. And it sort of made me realise that I'm not quite marathon strong at the moment, because, you know, those sort of sessions where when you're marathon fit, you feel really good in the last 10 minutes of that second rep, whereas I was hanging on. Felt really good for the first 20, but the last 10 I was, yeah, was working pretty hard. But I'm sure I'll get some benefit from it. Saturday was 60 minutes in the morning and another 35 in the afternoon with some strides. And then Sunday was 2 hours 15 over, you know, around Mount Ainslie, which is reasonably hilly. So that was 33K at 405s. And so it was a 100-mile week. So biggest week since I got injured before Berlin, which is, what, 3 months. So, yeah, things are – body's in one piece. And, yeah, I guess over the next 8 weeks, you know, there's probably not going to be anything real special in my training. It's just, I guess, building those building the foundation for the BUR prep.
You go, Julian. I'll give you this one. Right. Go for it.
How's that heart rate working out for you?
Yeah, pretty good, actually. It does slow me down. There was one run last week that I didn't wear the heart rate, and it was Saturday afternoon. And halfway through, I'm just going too hard. I didn't have the heart rate there to look down at. So I think it is helping me.
It teaches you, doesn't it? So after a few months, you'll know what you're supposed to feel like at different paces.
Exactly. So I think it's definitely the best thing I've done in a long time in terms of trying to train a bit smarter. I still think I can run a little bit slower on those easy runs because they're still all sub 420s pretty much. So, but baby steps for me.
Brad, you say baby steps, but I'm a bit worried about you when you're counting down a marathon that's 17 weeks away.
Yeah, but did you notice that I said that, like, I'm not banging out any super impressive sessions. Like, it's just getting through the weeks. So it was more of just saying, just a reference point that BWAR is now 17 weeks away, not that I'm actually starting to hit marathon training now.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Have you got some things that you might hit in between, though? Like, you got something else to put a bit of focus on?
Yeah, it's a good question, Brady, because at the moment it's really hard to just stay motivated when, you know, BWAR is 17 weeks away. I am going to do a park run in a couple of weeks, which like I do sort of tend to get myself up for those. And that'll just be a good indication to see how, I guess, this 4-week training block has gone, and just to see where I'm at, really, because the sessions I've been doing haven't really given me much of an indication of, you know, what sort of shape I'm in. But it's probably a good thing, because if I start doing sessions where I think I'm in pretty good shape, I then probably start to push the envelope a bit too much. So I'll definitely race, but I don't know if it'll be anything before Christmas. I'd say it'll be maybe like a half marathon, maybe Hobart in January.
Cool.
Or a couple of track races as well after Christmas.
When's the New South Wales 10K?
Yeah, I reckon that's probably 2 weeks before BWAR. 2 to 3 weeks.
Perfect.
So that could work well. I just want to probably get on the track a little bit if I was going to do that just so I'm not banged up too badly. It'd be bad going straight into a 10K race on the track where I hadn't actually stepped on the track before for a while. So I'll look into that.
Smart thinking. Hey, boys, it was a big week in distance running, marathon running, Australian 5K elite races, and a few big announcements and a few big coaching separations. Well, one significantly big coaching separation the last couple of weeks. We might start off with New York. Did you boys catch it at all?
The aftermath, I saw.
Saw the aftermath. What about you, Brad? Did you catch anything?
Yeah, I recorded it on Fox and on the Sunday night and watched it on the Monday.
Oh, the good life, eh, Fox? Don't have to look for those dodgy bootleg streams the next morning and stay away from social media.
Yeah, it's not bad. But mind you, it's sort of good watching the highlights because, you know, you get the whole race in 10 minutes, whereas I sort of sat through the whole 2 hours.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, tell me something, because I was listening to another podcast on it tonight when I was running, actually, and they were saying that the girls' race had some really good coverage. I know New York sends the females off first, and that's something that I think needs to be probably brought up, because after spending 42Ks with the lead females at Berlin and seeing how the lack of coverage they got, when you watch the replay, were they on pretty much front and center? And I think I read a few people's tweets just saying, because the female race was so good and with Shailene Flanagan getting the win, it was almost like people forgot about the men's race.
Yeah, I guess they get the first whole half an hour to themselves because the men haven't started yet. But even then, towards the back end, they show pretty much the last, the last 5K of the women's. And I guess they can do that because the men are sort of in that, you know, just after halfway, 25K, where everyone's still together. So the men's race is not that exciting, whereas the women's is quite exciting with the last 5K. So, I guess it's a good reason to separate the races.
And another thing, they don't get caught up with sub-elite guys like me trying to hang on to them for 42K and kind of getting in their road coming down the finishing chute.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's not a balance. Julian, what did you see in the highlights? Anything stand out to you?
Oh, I saw Shailene Flanagan say something like, "Fuck yeah," as she came into the finish line. And I thought that was great.
That was good.
I thought that was amazing, actually. That was one of my favourite bits.
That's exactly. Didn't you do that at like 37K at Berlin? Or didn't you fist pump and do exactly that?
She did it at 42.1K. I did it 5K earlier in the middle of nowhere to nobody in particular. She did it to the world. I was happy with it.
Yeah, it's pretty good, isn't it? She's had some ups and downs, though, hasn't she, over the last couple of years? And on paper, like, that was a loaded field, and you would have thought maybe, you know, top five would have been a credible performance from her. And to get the win in 2:26.53, a minute in front of Mary Kataney, very impressive.
Well, it shows what a hilly course and a tactical race can do. Like, just maybe not a hilly course, but a difficult day. So although the weather was not too bad, the course is difficult there. At Chicago, bit of a difficult day. Course was flat, obviously, but you see the Americans coming out and actually beating the Africans in this case. So you've got Galen Rupp, who comes and kicks away to the win at Chicago. Then you've got Shailene kicking away and winning it at New York, and it's you don't see that at Berlin. They're nowhere to be seen. Same with London. It's very rare, except maybe Ryan Hall, we saw him, but it's rare to see those non-Africans do well there. So yeah, it's an interesting one. The harder the course, the less African influence on the race, basically.
Yeah, spot on. It's probably good for the American market having American distance runners win them. I think she's pretty much blown up now, hasn't she? She was on the Today Show, and very interesting observation, the amount of support for Shailene and Meb Keflezighi, who finished in 2 hours 15 minutes, compared to Galen Rupp and Jordan Hesse, a month earlier at Chicago. Do you boys notice that with the people you're following on Twitter and everything?
I definitely saw some different news, I guess. I reckon that's true. She's a bit of a golden girl now, isn't she?
Yeah, she certainly is. And I think, you know, like, she had to pull out of Boston earlier in the year with a stress fracture in the back, and it shows how injury and how it can impact you. I was talking to someone else on my other podcast about this last week, how it can have a positive impact on you and make you kind of change your training up and often sometimes freshen you up to be able to gear up and get to new heights for your next marathon around. And even she said that in the press conference afterwards, that when she missed that marathon, it was the first time she missed a spring marathon for her in, you know, 4 or 5 years. And she went in fresh and she did some track work. And then her and her coach pretty much, Jerry Schumacher, Julian, you know him, don't you?
Yeah.
Jerry.
They pretty much said she's in the shape of her life. So, she went out there and got it done. And, yeah, what a massive achievement. First female in 40 years, first American female in 40 years to get the win at New York. And She did say beforehand that she was half thinking if there was a chance that she would win, that this would be it, she would retire. But, yeah, looked $1 million that last 5K, just blew them away through the hills of Central Park there. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, pretty impressive. One thing I did notice when I watched the replay, 35K mark, they 32, maybe 32K mark, went through the drink stations, and Flanagan just held onto her drink for way longer than the other two ladies that were with her at that stage. And I thought there was maybe something in that, and just the importance of getting your drinks down at that stage of the race. And, yeah, not sure if it was a bonking thing for the other girls in the last 5K, but, yeah, Shailene finished full of running, which was pretty impressive.
Yeah, well, the two things for me, one was, as you said, about Shailene having that break, and you do often see people when they're forced to have a break, they do actually come back stronger. So I guess, you know, for people out there that get injured, it's not necessarily a bad thing to have a bit of a break. And the other thing was with Kitani, it was really interesting the way she ran, because she normally just clears out from everyone like really early, and she never did that. So I don't know what her prep was like, but also for her, it must start to become a bit of a mental game, because she's used to being by herself with 5K to go. So when she's got people around her, mentally that must be quite difficult for her, I reckon, when she's used to just being out on her own and she can just relax and run to her own tempo. What do you boys think?
Yeah, Julian, you've got some answers here, Julian, because they went through in 1:16, and I saw the initial press conference afterwards, and she touched on having an issue at 3 p.m. the day before, and that was all that was disclosed. But I think, Julian, did you read somewhere that she indicated she got her period after not having it for two or 3 months?
Her agent basically came out and said this was what she was talking about. So they didn't say this is the reason that she didn't run well. They said this is the reason she wasn't feeling good is because she got her period the day before. And she had, because of her training regime, like when I'm the professional on this, but I believe that when ladies are training really hard and they're putting their body under a lot of stress, their cycles get quite messed up. And then she, obviously due to a taper and maybe backing off the load a little bit, she got her period the day before the marathon, which clearly affected her. Paula Radcliffe said that in her book, as shit as it is, I did get a few little snippets of advice or insight. She said that she would have broken the marathon world record by more if she didn't have her period the first time round at Chicago. So it obviously affects ladies differently. And Mary struggled with that one, obviously.
Well, she ran 2:17.01 at New York at the start of the year, or not start, in April, when she won that in dominant fashion and absolutely smashed him early. So it's strange for a 2:17 lady to be going through the first half of New York. I do know it's way hillier. They went through in 1:16, like they were jogging through halfway.
Yeah. It's not a fluke, but everyone, it's a good show that everyone has a bad day and that everyone's beatable at some point. So throw yourself out there, Brady, and you may even beat me at Steigen.
Yeah, just like I have the last three times I've raced you down there, eh? Yeah, interesting one. And obviously, it's more for that effect of the marathon, though, that you have to stand on that start line at the time the gun's going to go, feeling like good. Like, how many people rock up with little niggles or personal issues, or they don't like the weather on the day, and it just brings them undone. And you know, yeah. Flanagan obviously got it all right in the day, and she's the reason. That's the reason why she got the win.
True. Yep. Yeah. She. Yeah. I mean, she's run the better race, plain and simple.
That's it. Hey, the men's. It was Jeffrey Kamworor from Kenyon, and he's only 24. This guy, and I remember him from just smashing, or not smashing, but trying to smash Mo Farah. They're always. He was always a guy that Mo Farah was worried about in the track 10Ks, but he actually ran in his seventh marathon, and it's his first big marathon major win. 24-year-old, as I said, runs 2:10.53 at New York on the hilly course. dropped a 4:21 25th mile to break clear of Wilson Kipsang, and yeah, he won by 3 seconds, but there wasn't a lot. Well, there was a lot in it, but it looks like it's less on paper. Not sure what Kipsang was doing. It was like he wanted to have a crack, and then he kind of dropped off a bit, and then it was almost like he'd come around the corner and seen the finish line and was like, oh, I've still got a bit of juice here. I can put in a bit of a surge. And, yeah, he kind of closed in on Conwara really quick, but was never going to win it, if that makes sense. So with a you know, veteran marathoner like Kipsang, it was kind of strange to see him make that mistake. You guys see that? Do you think anything of that?
Yeah, because Kenwaro broke away with, I don't know, maybe three or so K to go, and he got away from Kipsang really easily. But then they panned back to Kipsang, and he was making a real charge. This was the bit just before they leave Central Park, and then they come back in. So he was making this massive surge then, and I thought it was weird because if he was feeling so good, like, I don't know why he didn't go with the move initially, because I reckon trying to surge to make up time, you know, once a person's gone, is a lot harder than just going with them initially, especially if he was feeling okay, which it looked, you know, the way he was trying to get back on, it looked like he was still moving okay. So yeah, it was weird.
Strange kind of finish to watch. Mm. And DeCesa from the Nike 2 Hour Project, he was a bit of a, not a disaster, but obviously didn't live up to the hype of the Nike 2 Hour Project and didn't run really well there. Was back in third spot in 2:11. So good to see him back running well. Good to see Kipsang fronting up again. What's he ran? 72K in the last 5 weeks. He got the first 30K in Berlin done and pulled out. And then, second in Berlin. Wouldn't it be a bad way to pick up some cash, would it? Get the appearance fee, probably get a bonus to get through 30K and then get the appearance fee and then get second place at New York?
Yeah, pretty good. Sure. Not, mind you, I don't know if he needs the money, really. I'm sure he's doing pretty well.
Yeah. So. Rightio, Brad, you also, you watched the Noosa Bolt. I'm not sure if you've run it before, haven't you? Give us something about the Noosa Bolt up at Queensland on the weekend. Something local.
Yes. So I ran in 2011. I guess it's the premier 5K road race in the country. It's always on the Saturday afternoon before the Noosa Triathlon. And it's a 1.6K street circuit. And it's always sort of lined with crowds sort of four deep. All the triathletes are going to compete on the Sunday generally come out. So it's an amazing atmosphere. It's probably the best atmosphere I've ever raced in. And in the women's, it was won by Melissa Duncan in 16:21. So she beat Eloise Wellings, who ran 16:38. And that's a great result for Lissy Duncan because she's been out for close to 2 years, I think, or at least a year with foot surgery. So she missed the Olympic Games and was pretty much a certainty to go to the Olympics. So it's great to see her back running well. And in the men's, Geordie Williams won that in 14:12, beat Stewie McSween, who came in at 14:18, Adrian Plummer, 14:31. He must have out-sprinted Brad Milosevic, who came in at 14:32, and James Nipperis rounded out the top five in 14:37. So, as I said before, I think the highlight for me from that race was seeing Melissa Duncan back in fine form after some bad luck.
Yeah. Hey, tell us about when you ran in 2011. How would your time stack up to that?
Yes, I think I was 14:37 or something like that. They pay down to fifth, and I caught Geordie Williams just as coming up over the bridge, so which is uphill, and then unfortunately it's a downhill finish, and he was able to sprint away from me that day, so I ended up sixth and no money, but I was happy with the time, so I ran 14:37, I think I ran.
That's pretty solid. I've just Googled it looking through the results. Patrick Tiernan, a couple of spots behind you.
Yeah, I think he was about 16.
It's not a bad sculpt, though, is it? He's in the full Nike kit here, so he must have been sponsored, so I'd be taking that.
Yeah, I've actually got a photo as well of me in front of him, so, I've kept that one.
Yeah, it's on a frame in the wall when you walk into your house, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hey, they give out, like, veterans awards. That'd be a veterans record, surely. 14.
I was 31 then.
31? What, 8 years ago?
Yes, 2011. I was,
31. Dang. Veteran of the show. Hey, more news, boys. More news, Mo Farah splits with Alberto Salazar. Pretty big news in the marathon world. Reason is he wants to go back and live in London, obviously where he's from, and going to have the same coach that Paula Radcliffe had in her later years, her husband, Gary Lowe. Thoughts, opinions? Had this been coming for a while? What do we reckon? Julian, over to you first. You're the opinionated one of the three.
This has been coming for more than a while, like from what I've been seeing. He's been trying to distance himself pretty much, I reckon, for a couple of years. It seems like he barely trains with the group anymore. He's always in either Ethiopia or Kenya or back in London, St. Moritz or Font-Rameau. So he goes to a lot of places that these other guys are not at. And who really knows, like, who's writing the programs? He probably had this contract with Nike and with the Nike Oregon project that he had to sort of, I guess, keep appearances up. But I reckon as soon as that shit started coming out about Salazar, he was just out of there and trying his hardest to get away from it. Not like I would be too if I was him. It's just it's dodgy as hell, and you would never want to get caught up in that. Like, whether you're guilty yourself or you're innocent, you'd be trying to get away from it, that's for sure.
It must be at the end of a contract or something, because he's kind of said, I want my kids to grow up in London, whereas his kids have been growing up in Oregon for quite some years now, so it can't have been too urgent for that move earlier on in the year. But what about the move for Gary Lowe, though? Like, is he in a, like, I know he looked after Paula's stuff and they were married, or they still are married, but has he coached anyone else other than Paula?
I'm not sure, but, like, I'm going to go back to the whole book thing again because that's about the most I know about this guy. And the book is bloody bizarre. It's really, like, it sounds like she was almost scared of him during their, like, during her racing. If she had a bad race, she would almost be scared to go and see him afterwards, because a couple of times he got upset with the way she raced. It was just I got the feeling like he was a bit of a jerk, and he definitely like treated her poorly early in the relationship. She wrote the book. She was obviously happy with it to go to print, but the way I'm reading it is he was a bit of a jerk, and then he continued to be a jerk.
Yeah, and you've questioned Paula Radcliffe on a separate podcast before, her performances and how they're not under the microscope a bit more. So is this just as dodgy kind of going to Gary Lowe as it was working with Salazar, though?
It's a good question. I don't think anything could be as dodgy as working with Salazar at the moment. Like, there's no more question. He might as well be called Salazar Konovich. Like the Russian sellers, he's that dirty, or well, he's got that many question marks around him. But I think the move back to London, I can't see him keeping too motivated with the marathon stuff. I don't think we'll see that much of Mo Farah in the future. I know he's doing London in April, but I've got a feeling like if it goes poorly, then he's had a very long time in the spotlight, and he's done super well. I just don't think it would be easy to step back from basically being unbeatable to putting in mediocre marathons. Because not everyone's a marathoner. It doesn't always work like that.
And I'm sure we'll talk about it when he builds up to London and how London's going to, I'm not sure. They always put a super quick field together, and I hope they continue to do that and don't put a field. You know when he runs in those great north runs and it's kind of like set up for him to win? I really hope they bring in a whole stack of 203, 204 guys and just go out at that pace and make it hard for him. And if he's good enough to win it against those guys, he does. But, he's obviously just following him on social media and stuff. He's pretty into the spotlight, into the kind of celebrity scene, and he's writing children's books, and he's kind of got a lot going on, so I could easily see him just going into that kind of A-lister world now that he's back in a huge name in London. Remember when we were talking to Dave Monty about him at the Berlin press conference? Or not the press conference, but just after we picked up our bibs at the elite athlete kind of hotel?
Yeah, I remember. He was saying no one will go near him because he's asking for too much, basically. The only race that will pay close to what he's raised to asking for is London, because it's where he's from. They probably don't even have to ask for they don't have to pay him as much as the other ones would. Because when he was growing up, that he was basically under a scholarship from the London Marathon. They provide him accommodation and everything in London. So I don't know whether there's something there that he has to repay or he feels compelled to repay. But they definitely looked after him when he was younger, kind of breaking out.
Yeah. Brad, got any thoughts on this before we move on?
Not anything really extra from what Julian said, but I reckon British Athletics would be pretty happy that he's cut ties with Salazar. I think I read something a while back that they were urging him to do that. So, yeah, I think they'd be pretty happy about it.
Mm. Hey, the latest part of the last part of our news segment this week is also our rant for the week. So we're going to pick one thing to rant on about in the week. I reckon we could have picked about five things this last week, though. I was kind of pretty keen to put in my two bowls worth about a separate rant, but I'm going to leave it to Julian for this week. And, yeah, the big announcement that came 3 days after, well, not the big announcement, maybe, see, we're kind of adding to this kind of hype a bit, but the Gwen Jorgensen announcement on Twitter, Julian. That's a bit of news that you were covering, and it's also come with a bit of a rant of the week. Moose is on the loose. Go for it.
Well, yeah, I did feel like when I was reading it, my blood was starting to boil.
Tell us what happened, though, first.
Okay, so when Jorgensen...
Gwen Jorgensen.
Jorgensen.
Yeah.
Good, yeah, Gorgon. Gwen Jorgensen,
yes.
She is a triathlete. I think she actually, does she still live in Australia? She may. Or maybe not anymore. But I think she was based in Australia for a while. She announced that she was going to quit the triathlon world. And, well, her next goal was to win a world marathon major title and then an Olympic marathon gold medal. So she put up a tweet with a couple of things that she's already done ticked, like Olympic triathlon medal or gold medal. There was a box ticked, and then the next box unticked was Olympic gold marathon.
Said become a mum. That was the third one. Four boxes, three of them ticked.
Yeah, exactly. So like, oh yeah, I did that one. I always wanted to do that. I did that. I always wanted to win the triathlon gold medal. I did that. And now I always wanted to win the marathon gold medal. And I'm going to do that. Like, obviously, it's just the next thing off my list. And so a little bit of background on Gwenny. She's run 15:52 for 5K. She went to college at the University of Wisconsin, which is a pretty credentialed running school. She was in the top 20 of NCAA's cross country 1 year, which is a really difficult thing to do, but it hardly suggests that you have the potential to win an Olympic gold medal in the marathon. Nonetheless, one of the most difficult I won't say most difficult events, but it's a very difficult event to beat the Africans in, basically. So the last American lady to win gold medal was Joan Benoit in LA. There's been some very good marathoners since that haven't really come that close. So she's basically just told every ladies marathoner in America, ladies like Shalane, Desi Linden, Kara Goucher,
Amy Craig.
Amy Craig.
Jordan Asai just ran like second fastest time ever.
Yep. She's just said, hey, I'm going to beat all you guys.
I'm going to
beat all these Kenyans. Then I'm going to beat all these Ethiopians. And I'm going to...
Don't forget the Turkish, Kenyan Turkish.
Japanese.
Bahrain, yeah.
I'm going to be the best in the world at this. Even though I don't try... This isn't even my sport. Like, I've done some... Yeah, like, you might argue, oh, but she's never trained properly for running. Well, she's been training as an endurance athlete for, like, the last 10 or 12 years or even longer. Like... If you don't think that cycling an hour and a half a day helps you running, you're crazy because you're just developing this engine. And you can't just say, oh, you can whip off 15 minutes by focusing on running. It's not that simple. So I was a little bit like, if I was in those ladies' shoes, the Americans, even the Africans, I would be thinking, geez, I really want to crush this lady. As soon as she gets back, first race, I'm going to fucking crush her. I'm going to just show her what it's really like in the running world, and she can't just make statements like that and think she can get away with it because she's disrespecting them.
Well, the thing that disrespected Shailene the most is the fact that she put that on Twitter and, got the attention she did. She got, a stack of retweets, a stack of media. Runners World picked it up. It was all over kind of every running news outlet. And she did that 3 days after the New York Marathon, 3 or 4 days after. So, you've just become the first woman to run or win the New York Marathon. And then all of a sudden the running news changes 3 days after that with this new announcement from her. So, I don't know, whoever's doing her PR, they've probably got exactly what they're after, everyone talking about it. But... they're feisty kind of competitors. Like, you got to look at the results from the Rio Olympics. Amy Craig was 9th. Shailene was 6th. Desi Linden was 7th. Like, the American marathon ladies are legit. Like, they're amazing as it is. And you think you're going to roll all three of them. Plus, you chuck Jordan Hsieh in that, who's running quicker than all of them at the moment. And, then, you're going to go, well, even the Jemima Somgong, who won it, like, she was dope to the eyeballs and she's serving a ban at the moment. So you're also saying, I'm going to smash all these potential dopers as well.
Yeah.
It's a big statement.
I think it was, we'll keep an eye on it, but I give her very, very little chance of achieving her next goal. Even though, it's great to have ambitions, and I like people that put themselves on the line like that, there's a way to do it without basically shitting on someone else, which is, I think, what she's done there.
Mm. Brad, any comments? You agree with Julian?
Well, I'm going to stick up for Gwenny a little bit here.
Gwenny. We could have potentially got her on for a guest, I reckon, and you guys just slayed her off calling her Gwenny.
Yeah, we'll get her on, but I'm on her side here. Well, the two things that I don't like, one is the timing. I think, let Shailene have her time in the sun. So wait a month.
Well, she's got 2.5 years to the next Olympics to announce this stuff.
Yeah.
She wants to win a major before that. She has to win one of the big ones before that, though.
And the other thing that I don't like was putting gold up there. So... Like, I think she's a chance of making the team because I know that the times that you rattled off there, Julian, like, they were probably when she was, quite young. She's a lot more mature now and has a lot more years behind her in endurance sports. But a lot of you probably don't know that she ran 32:12 at the Sydney 10, 2 years ago in the middle of her triathlon training.
I knew that.
And beat, yeah.
I was 2 minutes in front of her.
You're in the race. And yeah,
she nearly got me.
Yeah, so she beat Eloise by 40 seconds that day. And I don't think people like Desi Linden would run much faster than that on that course either. So,
well, they don't need to. She was training for 10Ks. That was her thing. She needed to be a good 10K runner.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that she's a realistic shot of making the team. I think putting that she's going to win gold is a bit of a bold statement. But good on her, Like, if I'd won an Olympic gold medal in triathlon and had won all the ITU races, it's like, well, what else is there to achieve? So good on her for taking another challenge. But, yeah, as I said before, I disagree with the timing of it and also putting that she's out to win gold. I think her just making the team would be an amazing achievement. And, I'm happy to put a case of beer on it at this stage, Jules.
Well, I'm making the team.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm making the team, yeah.
Definitely. Take it. Done.
All right. Well, let's revisit this at episode, what will it be, 150, between 150 and 200?
Yeah. Someone would have sued us by then. We'll be shut down for sure. Hey, Desi Linda's run 31 minutes. 31:30.
Yeah. So she's in ballpark. So, Sydney 10's a hard course.
Desi's tough.
It's tough.
You know, she's ran New York, though. Like, she's had a crack at a marathon before and ran, like, 2:44 or something, hasn't she? What did she run?
2:41 she ran.
Yeah. I put that up there in the Lance Armstrong attempt at New York. That wasn't a fair dinkum crack.
What, she was only in gold medal Olympic shape for the triathlon. I reckon you're in fairly good shape to run a marathon, aren't you?
Because she wouldn't run 2.5 to 3 hours in triathlon training, and you need to do that for the marathon. So she wouldn't have done the work to run a good marathon, even though she was training for triathlon. There's no way. So she's much better than that.
All right, there's a slab of beer on it, listeners. You heard it here first, Inside Running Podcast. Keep Brad and Julian honest when it comes up in a couple of months' time, or years' time.
Yes.
Hey, this week's show is sponsored by CEP Socks, and we had a review for them this week. So it's always good to come home and come in the driveway after a long day of work and see a package waiting on the front doorstep. And, yeah, I haven't used some compression socks before, and thanks to Julian for hooking these up. And, I loved them. I trained in them on Saturday. I did 3 by 10 minute reps. And, yeah, felt good, felt tight, didn't move at all during the session. Had a bit of extra length about them than what I'm used to. Kind of came up probably, I don't know, maybe 5 centimetres off the ankle bone. So that kind of not long socks but not short socks. And, yeah, really stoked to kind of have them on board for the show this week and letting us trial them out. What did you boys think? Brad, we might throw to you first. You're a bit of a sock man.
Yeah, no, not really. I normally get around in my New Balance just cotton anklets.
Well, I just want to tell the listeners that on our podcast, you buy a fresh, brand new pair of socks in the town of the marathon you're about to compete in.
Pretty much, yeah, but I'm not super fussy about my socks. I generally go for something that's nice and lightweight. So I wore the CEP socks for my long run. So I did 33K in them. And, yeah, super comfy and cushiony. A little bit longer than what I'm used to because I normally have the ones that just come above the top of the shoe. So obviously not the anklets where there's a chance of my Achilles rubbing on the back of the shoe. So high enough, but these ones came up, as you said, a little bit higher. I enjoyed them. I guess the only thing that I'm probably not used to is the only time I've ever used compression socks before has been really for recovery. I've never really run in them that much. So they are a slightly different material. So I guess that takes a little bit getting used to. But overall, I enjoyed them.
Julian, what about yourself?
Well,
what's that?
I think you should find it hard to go back to your little $3 cotton jobs from now on. The ones that lose their stretch in 2 washes. I could never do that again. I don't think I've got a cotton sock in my entire drawer anymore. I love socks, so I like heaps of different ones. And when you have so many different socks, you can find the perfect fit for every shoe. So if you've got maybe a little bit of movement in your shoe, it's slightly too broad, or you've got one that's maybe a quarter size, half size longer than what you normally wear, you bang a thick stance or a Belaga sock on and it fills it out. Or if you like a tight fitting shoe, you can put on a Steigen and it's a nice, like, it takes volume out of the shoe and you can get a smaller shoe on your foot. So the CEP for me sits right in the middle, medium thickness, really tight compression, so there's definitely no movement. Good looking sock, like nice clean lines. It's not fluffy, it's not thick, and the logo's nice. Breathes well. My foot, I've never had a burning foot in it. I was battling with burning feet in some shoes, and I was using different socks, and this is the one I settled on in the very end to get rid of it. So yeah, these things last bloody forever. I've got some from about 4 years, I reckon, still going through the cycle.
Yeah, the logo. Sorry, Brad, you go, mate.
Oh, I think that's the good thing about that compression material is that it is quite durable. Unlike my cotton socks that you put your toe through the end of them pretty quickly. So yeah, I look forward to seeing how long I can get out of them.
I liked seeing the logo on the front, like on the shin as well. Like every other pair of socks I've got, well, other than probably the Steichen ones, obviously, they're a bit different in design, but has it kind of on the outside and the inside, and it's kind of taking up two logos, and they're trying to get as much kind of marketing as possible out of where the logoing is there. But yeah, it was kind of cool having the sides free and the logo. You can kind of look straight down at your feet during a run or during the session, and the logo looks up at you but doesn't kind of show itself to the world. So pretty modest move by them, and yeah, nice and tight, as I said, didn't move, and really appreciate their support on this week's show. I must admit, I'm probably a bit naive, and Julian, you might be able to answer this question, but CEP socks, I've never come across them. Well, were they the pair of shoe socks that you got at the Berlin Expo? Remember before the race?
Yeah, so okay. German brand, went to the Berlin Marathon Expo, and they had just every colour of sock garment you can think of. So I was trying to match one to my shoes. They didn't have the exact one, so it took me a while to bloody
spend
decide.
Half an hour in there.
Half an hour, bought it, didn't wear it in the race anyway. The all black was, it's pretty hard to beat all black, really.
Yeah.
One thing we should point out, though, with these product reviews is that what works for us could vary greatly for what works with you. So one of my pet peeves is when I read shoe reviews on the internet, and then someone comes in to the store and tells me, oh, this guy reviewed it and he said it was so good and I just have to have it. And I think, oh, okay, well, he might have a foot that requires like a 4E size shoe and you have a very narrow foot. So what he loves is what you're going to hate. So why do you think it's going to work for you? Everyone's different and everyone has different preferences, and so when you take these reviews, it's always best to have a look at them objectively, I guess.
But where do you, like, you know, I've been, as I said, a bit naive. Like, I've never seen these socks other than that time in Berlin, but you guys, like, running specialty stores, obviously stock them. I wouldn't expect that'd be in my local Rebel or Athlete's Foot.
Yeah, I think it'll depend on the retailer, but We have them at the running. We do quite well with them. I know you can get them in some cycling stores. You should be able to probably find them on their website as well. But we actually do pretty well with them because they are, like, it's easy for me to sell them because I love them so much.
Mm. I'm actually looking forward to doing some track work in them. Like, you know, when you want your socks to not be, you know, when you're banging out 400s or 200 meter reps, you want your socks to be as tight as possible and not any kind of that sponginess. You want to almost be able to feel the bottom of your flats or the bottom of your spikes without having that sock factor, almost like you're in barefoot. So, I'm looking forward to jumping in and doing a bit of them. So, yeah, appreciate CEP Socks jumping on board for episode one. It's a bit of a risk when you're not really sure what the podcast is going to be produced like. And, yeah, appreciate that they're on board early in the show. Second last segment, boys, the listener question. This one coming from Ross Pentland. So Ross hit us up on Twitter. He actually beat us to it. We were hoping to get the suggestions for the listener question out on Facebook, but hit us up on Twitter and he asked us, what is the hardest or toughest race you boys have ran? That was thought-provoking for me because, yeah, there's a lot of races we run and I think we've all been guys, well, Julian's run kind of 100Ks before and everything in between, probably right down to an 800 metres, Julian. And Brad's come from the track world up to the marathon. And, yeah, we've had a vast range of experiences in all kinds of races. So it took me a while to come up with one. But, Brad, did you want to maybe kick us off and toughest or hardest race you've competed in?
Well, mine's going to combine track and a marathon. And it was actually a track marathon relay. So it was teams of 10. And you obviously had to run the marathon distance on a track and you could basically split up the distances however you wanted. So generally it would work out that each person would do approximately 10 400s, but you'd have 9 person recovery. So, you know, We were sort of running them in, you know, 56, 57 seconds and having close to 9 minutes recovery. And early on, everyone would sort of just be chatting between their reps, but got to reps 7 and 8 and it just gradually caught up with you. So to the point that for the last couple of reps, people were coming halfway up the straight to take the baton off you because you were just so lactic. It was carnage at the track. Everyone was just, you know, lying on the high jump mats with a lactic headache, waiting for that tap on the shoulder saying you're up in about a minute's time. And in terms of that lactic pain, I've never experienced anything like it. I guess it lasted. The problem with that was it lasted over 2 hours. It just got worse over a 2 hour period. So it's a weird event, but caused a lot of pain. So any listeners out there, go and actually try doing 10 really hard 400s with about 9 minutes recovery and see how you feel after the, you know, reps 8, 9, and 10.
What kind of times were you banging them out in?
Yeah, like 57.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, what?
50. Yeah, think about it.
10 by 4.
But 9 minutes recovery. So the first 5 reps, you're like, what's this about? This is easy. But then, yeah, reps 8, 9, and 10 just got harder and harder and harder.
9 minutes recovery is almost awkward, though. Like, you still got to keep the legs warmed up, but at the same time, you don't have enough time to recover.
Yeah, and that's why I think those early reps, everyone was sort of just jogging around the track, having a chat, and then, yeah, the piano started to jump on your back at about rep 6 to the point that it's like, well, I'm not going to run laps now. I'm just going to try and sit around and wait for my next rep. So, interesting fact, John Landy's son was in my relay team that night. So, yeah, there you go.
That's a strange answer, Bradley. I wouldn't have expected that from you, actually.
No, yeah,
I guess.
A little bit different.
Yeah, maybe the team effect, though. Like, you kind of got to go. When it's yourself, you can kind of pull the pin or just jog it in or whatever. But, yeah, when you got other people relying on you, it's a bit of a different situation.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought it was a good response in terms of combining track and marathon, which is sort of where I've, you know, started at the track and I'm ending at the marathon.
All right, over to Julian. Can I have a guess of yours before we go into yours, Julian? Give me 2 guesses.
Go for it.
Well, when you were on my other podcast, Tell Me Your Tales, and you were interviewed, you spoke about how hard the 100K race was and how you were, like, crying and, like, you weren't sure if you were going to finish and went through different emotions. First guess, that one?
Look, that was hard, for sure. That was hard, but it wasn't my hardest one.
That's the answer. All right. So it's got to be Bogle and Hotham when you set the record after 30 years and smash everyone that day?
Well, I like how you're pumping me up. Do you want to have some more guesses?
No, they're the only 2. I cannot actually, the year I paced you at Melbourne Marathon, you had a bad second half that day. That could possibly be it.
Mate, we have short memories as runners. It's very easy to forget the ones that hurt that much.
They're my 3 guesses. It's got to be one of those, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'd say, look, the third one's probably the closest.
Right.
With the ultra running, it is very, like, you go through some very dark patches, some really low lows, but because of the nature of the event where you can take on more fuel, you can rest, you can walk in patches, you're by yourself a lot, so there's really no pressure on you out there. You get some highs. It's more like a roller coaster, whereas a hard marathon run all out from the start to the finish is like one big slippery slide of feeling great at the top to being an absolute wreck at the bottom, and you just slide your way down. And it's very easy. It's very hard to come back once you start that journey. So the hardest races I've ever done is a hard marathon and blowing up. So I've done it plenty of times. That was an example, the one where you messed up my first half and I blew up. And then the other one. Oh,
took
we went through.
Oh, a bit quick, actually, yeah. Maybe a minute too quick.
I was telling you the whole time I want 320s, and I didn't see one 320 in 20 kilometres.
Well, if you go for 320s, you might run 322. So I thought we'd aim for 317s and just have a bit up our sleeve. But anyway.
That's why I've got a better PB than you do.
Exactly. That actually is exactly why.
I think it is wise.
Settling
you're
down
a better runner than I am. We both agree you're a better runner than I am. No. I know you'll agree on that. And I've just had enough blow-ups to know you've got to go a bit safer early on, whereas you're someone who can't let a girl pass you and you have to jump on board. But anyway.
Give us the answer.
Marathon, road, it can be hilly, it can be flat, but if you blow up in a marathon anywhere between 30 to 35K, that is a very hard 40 minutes to finish. That is one of the worst.
Yeah, and that leads me into my answer, and it's actually, to give the listeners some context, I paced Julian when he was trying to break, 220 maybe? We were pretty ambitious back in the day.
Yeah, maybe making some bad calls.
Maybe in 2014, I took him through the first half of Melbourne Marathon, and then he returned the favour in 2015 when I ran my debut marathon, and his pacing was much better than mine, and he was telling me to settle down the whole time and concentrate, and I was a bit naive. I was a 66:30 kind of half marathon guy pretty consistently and thought I could easily slow to 70 minutes through the halfway and then pick it up a bit in the second half. And I tried that and I got to 32K and I was pretty cooked. And 34K, I was lights out. I didn't really know too much about gels and race nutrition that day and didn't really take much in. And for me, that was the hardest race because it was just so far to the finish line. It was probably 6 or 7K where I really had to dig deep and try and stay on the road, and I was a bit all over the place, and a guy in front of me that day, Dion, actually collapsed about 500 metres from the finish line, and I remember running into the MCG that day and just hating life. My technique was shocking. Wasn't sure if I was really going to make it, and it was probably that combination of trying to race hard in an event I probably underrated a bit. Everyone told me about how hard the marathon was and I really didn't respect it enough and made for a terrible second half, but something to learn from. And a really good question from Ross that we're going to put the listener question each week on our Facebook page. So if you listen to the podcast and you want to kind of put your two bowls worth in, you can get onto the Facebook page every week and also answer that listener question. So there's been some good responses since we put that on there today, and looking forward to reading through and hearing some other possible disaster stories or times when people have kind of dealt with that adversity probably in a positive way, a bit more than us three have just spoken about. So thanks, fellas, for opening up there.
Good idea putting it out there, throwing it out. I like that.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how people's responses stack up. And we've already got a couple of responses there, so appreciate those people who are helping us from day one get off on the right foot. That's about it today, fellas. Thanks for your time again. What's on for the weekend? Anyone racing or anyone doing anything? Brad, what do you got?
No, just 2.5 hours on Sunday, so no racing for me.
Nice and easy.
Yeah.
What about you, Julian?
I miss another long run. I'm finding ways to get out of my long run. I'm going up to Albury to do the pub to pub, which is a fun run up there. I've got a couple of friends up there, Run Strong Warriors. They live in Albury, and Ash and Kelly. They're gonna put me and Bree up, and we're gonna have a run between the two pubs. Have a beer afterwards.
4 hours should drive. Be fun. It's a long way to go for a fun run.
I love local events, mate. Love the fun runs.
Must be a bit of cash on offer.
And money.
Cash.
Who doesn't like money?
I'm on their website now, $1,000 first prize. That explains why he wants to sit in the car for 8 hours over the weekend.
You put it like that. That's
8 hours, 16 minutes if you go the quick way. 500 seconds, so if someone good rocks up, you're still going to go around with 500. Bree would nearly... who else? Do you know who's running the females? Bree would come close.
Maybe. There'll be some good runners. There's always good runners up there, mate. The river breeds them, I think.
Make sure you don't end up in Albury Wodonga after confusing those two towns on our last podcast.
Oh, I didn't confuse them. Hey, also, quick one. The running company Ballarat, just got a new batch of Nike Vaporfly 4% in. They're going very quickly. We have a few sizes available. I just, like, listeners, first crack, send a message through the Facebook page if you're interested in a pair, because they go very quickly. And I don't think Australia's getting any more until April next year. So there's a couple left in the store. but they are going quickly.
Going quick. I'll be off to Shepparton on Sunday, running the Moama Bowling Club Team Half Ironman Triathlon, which should be good over at Challenge Shepparton. It's a pretty big deal, Challenge Shepparton. So, yeah, linking up with two other local legends and having a bit of a crack there. Not sure how I'll go. I'm not really in shape to run a half marathon, but hopefully we can tempo it and get the job done. That should be pretty exciting. City to Seas on this weekend as well. So, pretty big event for Melbourne. So, looking forward to covering that a bit next week. And, Brad, we're going to leave the listeners with an interview that you conducted with Travis Haslam. Is that, have I pronounced it right?
Yep, 100%.
Jeez, I'm good, aren't I? Trav,
you are good.
Give us a bit of context on Trav before we throw it to the interview.
Yeah, I don't want to give too much away, but in his own words, he's the wrong side of 40. He's a father of three, has a very demanding job in Department of Health. And I think why we got him on was I think a lot of listeners can relate to him, trying to juggle, you know, demanding job, family, and also running. So he, you know, explains how he does that. But also he ran Melbourne Marathon recently and, you know, he turned a negative into a positive. So, yeah, there's a lot to get out of this. So I hope you enjoy it. And one thing he didn't say during the interview, which he'd like to say, is that he has won one marathon, which is one more than both of myself and you, Brady. So he wanted me to pass that on. So,
I like Travis.
Which one did he win?
He won Orange earlier this year in 2:39. So that's the other thing, you know. He's running, you know, what we discussed last week, sub-elite times. And he's, you know, got three kids and a really demanding job. So, yeah, hope the listeners get a lot out of it.
And I must say, I certainly did. I listened to it this morning on my morning run, and Brad did an excellent job. We bag each other out, flat out on here, but credit where credit's due. Brad did a ripping job of conducting the interview, and yeah, I really enjoyed it, Brad. It only goes for kind of like 20, 22 minutes, which is what we want to bring at the end of each week, but I really think people enjoy it, and yeah, well done to Brad for stepping outside his comfort zone, had a bit of a beer to loosen up, he told me, and yeah, conducting this interview. So enjoy that one, listeners, and we'll be back next week with all things running on the Inside Running Podcast. Any wise words, boys, to lead us off?
Run well.
Run well, run strong.
Stay injury free.
Stay injury free. Yeah, all right, guys. Thanks again for listening, and yeah, we'll catch you next week. Yeah, hit up the Facebook page if you want to get involved with that listener question, and we'll go from there. Thank you.
All right, bye, friends.
All right, we're here with our first ever guest for Inside Running, Mr. Travis Haslam. Thanks for your time, Trav.
Thanks, Craig. It's good to be here.
We'll start by, I guess, just introducing yourself with, yeah, I guess what you do for a job, family, and some PBs.
Thanks, Craig. Look, I'm Travis Haslam. I'm on the wrong side of 40. I'm the father of three boys under the age of seven. And I work for the Department of Health in the federal government. I'm an assistant secretary, which in non-public servant terms means I run a branch with a few sections, and I'm responsible for parts of the aged care sector in terms of access and policy around a few things there. So I guess between family, work, and life, and loving a run, I'm pretty busy most days of the week.
So we'll get into how you balance, I guess, work, running, and family life. But could you tell us, or tell the listeners, your PBs?
I'm pleased to say that most of my PBs have been set this side of 40. And as an older fella, I'm not slowing down at the moment. So that's been pretty good. I've managed to PB in Melbourne a few weeks ago with a 2:37 20-odd marathon, which was a good day out. I guess working back down, I don't have the pedigree that you and the other boys do on the track. However, my half marathon's around 74.5, which is pretty soft. My 10K is even softer at 34.5. But my 5K I set last year At 16:16 is probably my absolute upper limit. I think I got the best out of myself there. So I probably turned to running properly, nowhere near you guys, but properly as an older fella, and it's good to still be finding goals that I can achieve.
Yeah, you're certainly proving that age is no barrier. Getting better with age, just like a red, hey?
Yeah, absolutely. Don't mind one of those.
How did you get into running? And can you sort of give us, I guess, an idea of how your times have come down over the years you have been running?
Yeah, as I said, it's probably something as I've gotten older. I've always had a bit of a competitive element or outlet that's needed scratching that I've always wanted to do. So I did a lot of other things while I was younger. I wasn't into running when I was younger. I played a lot of sport. I actually refereed basketball for a long time at a pretty high level, national league and international games, which occupied most of my weekends. And I probably sort of transitioned out of that, in my early 30s when I was enjoying, when I was travelling for basketball and enjoying the weekend running around it a bit more than the game, so it was time to move on from that. At that point, I sort of looked at another challenge and did triathlon, and I did five Ironmans and, did my first one on my 30th birthday and thought I'd never do another, but sort of got the bug and did a few more. I was lucky enough to go to Kona and enjoy that. And at that point, I was running marathons and running on and off through that period. So, you know, to take it back, I remember the first half marathon I did 15 years ago. I ran it in about 150-odd here in Canberra. My ITB locked up and I couldn't walk properly for a week. So it's pretty distant memory for how horrible that was compared to where I've got to. But from the marathon, I remember I did one at the Gold Coast, and I did my first one in 3:35, and I was over the moon. I thought that was a great achievement. And then after that, I decided I really wanted to get under three, and it took me quite a few efforts to get under 3 hours. And then when I got there, including one that I in Canberra, I went 3:01 and just missed out, but had a good race the year after and put some consistent training together and took 10 minutes off that and ran 2:50. So basically I've progressed over time, and in the last 12 months I've probably run 4 or 5 marathons and getting better and better, and Melbourne was a good way to set a new PB.
And how long ago was it that you ran your first one in 3:30-odd?
So I think that was about 2004. So I didn't run one every year. I sort of came in and out, and with triathlons and other challenges. There was periods of there where work got a bit out of hand and the balance wasn't quite there. So I had a couple of years in there where I barely ran. But it's only been the last few years when I probably changed jobs and looked for a little bit more sustainability in all parts of my life that I've really been able to focus on it, and probably had that commitment to do it properly as well, rather than just enjoy it, socially, but actually try and see what I had in me as an old fella before it was too late.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that I love about the sport, is that just that progression that you can make if you're consistent and you stick at it and your body stays in one piece. Like if you look back at 2004 and when you ran 3:30, if somebody said to you that you'd be running almost an hour quicker, you probably wouldn't have believed them at the time. But just through consistency, it's amazing what the body can do and how it adapts.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I'm realistic about my ability. I haven't got anywhere through talent in any parts of my life. It's just been grind and hard work. And, I put myself well and truly in Brady's category from last week as a general punter. But I enjoy what I do. And I think with anything, you put the work in and effective use of your time, you can get the payoff. And running is one of those great things where you can be competitive with yourself no matter what your age and ability. You get to race people as well. And race day is a lot of fun because you've either put in the work or you haven't. And you get to see that and really test yourself.
Yeah, well said. Getting back to hard work, you touched on it before with your job, 3 kids, and trying to train, you're in sub-elite, you're sub-240, so you're not a punter, you're a sub.
Oh, really?
We worked out last week that anything under 2:40 is sub-elite.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
You've got a very demanding job, family, and also trying to fit in training. Like, what are some of the strategies that you've put in place to be able to do that? Because the three of us, we don't have families. I don't work very hard. Julian pretends to work hard, but you actually do. So what strategies do you put in place to be able to, tick all those boxes to run sub 2:40?
Yeah, I guess it's all in the perspective. So, you know, you can fill your time up and be busy, or you can be effective in what you do. You know, running to me is third in line in my priorities. You know, firstly is family and then work. That's the reality of my life. I'm really lucky. My wife is amazingly supportive, and she's been great for me to allow me to do the things I like to do. But you've also got to be realistic about how you use your time too. So, you know, we joke with you about the dad running club and the early hours. So for me, I get out early in the morning. Otherwise, it just doesn't happen. So unless I get a run early in the morning, you know, it needs to be done before the kids are up. You know, in winter in Canberra, it's dark, it's -7 and -8, it might be raining, but you just go and do it. You never regret the run that you did do, you only regret if you didn't. So even in terrible weather, it's worth persevering. In terms of management around that, you know, you do the simple things, like you lay out your stuff the night before, you set the alarm at the right time, and it's not a negotiation with yourself. You just go and do it and you get it done. But in saying that, if something was more important with family or with work, you know, you do those things first. Me missing a session every now and then isn't the end of the world at my age and my ability. I don't like to miss them, and sometimes I change them to make it work. However, you know, if there's something needed from a family perspective, that comes first. So for me, that's really important. And the other thing I'd probably say is, to be honest, I think I'm more effective as a worker. I'm more effective as a father and as a husband if I go for a run. You know, everybody knows how good they feel after a run. It's not like, you know, you feel worse having had a run. You've been outside, you've had fresh air, you know, your body's working well. I'm much better, you know, living my life the way I would like to, and being a better person within it if I've gone for a run. So for me, it's a bit of a non-negotiable most times, but only in the context of family and work come first, and that's where I'm at with my life, and I'm okay with that. And I get the most out of I can with the circumstances that I've got. And I think, you know, building that sustainability in what you do is important. So, you know, there's times where you have to go easier and times where you can really push yourself. And as a family, there's times where you need to take a back seat. And other times where you get that freedom to do those things. So I'm really lucky around that balance that I've got.
And I guess with running being, say, third on your priority list, you probably don't get as hung up on a poor session as you know, what I would, because I probably have running a bit higher up as the number three. So, yeah, I guess being busy outside of running takes your mind off those poor sessions or those poor periods of training.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I really admire what you're doing in terms of you're pursuing your goals in running and you're putting that as your number one priority. But as an older bloke with kids, those things are the first thing for me that come up as priorities. But in saying that, it's good to have balance in your life, because normally for most people, not all parts of their life are all going perfectly at the same time. So work might be crazy and really challenging, but I get my run in the morning, or, you know, life's good with the family and vice versa. There might be challenging times with, you know, the youngest is teething and I'm not getting any sleep, but, you know, I still get a run in and work's going well, and that's life. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as a punter, it's still, there's a lot of value that running adds.
Yeah. I think it takes a lot of self-discipline though. Like, as you said, like, often you're up middle of the night not getting any sleep. And so when the alarm goes off at 5 a.m, a lot of people, and probably myself included, goes, you know what, I think I need that extra 2 hours of sleep as opposed to getting out of bed. So it'd be very easy in your situation to make excuses for not getting out of bed to train. So how do you actually get yourself up?
Yeah, look, I'll be honest, it's easier when you're meeting someone at times, you know, meeting you or any of the lads. That makes life easier because you've made a commitment. However, the reality is, I guess, as I said earlier, unless I get out the door first thing, it's not happening. And if I haven't got my run in, and there's not a really good reason for it, or it's because I've gone soft, I'm not too happy with myself, and that doesn't play out too well. So just get it done, get out the door. I hate the treadmill, I don't care about the weather. I've run in snow here in Canberra. It's much nicer just to be outside and get that fresh air. So I think, you know, it adds value rather than detracts. And those times where you have gone soft on yourself, you know it, and it's not pleasant. You feel like you've cheated yourself.
Yeah. Can you give your listeners an idea of, I guess, your weekly mileage and the structure of your training to be able to, I guess, put yourself in sub 240 marathon shape?
Yeah, it's pretty simple. It's fairly traditional, I guess. I'm not somebody who is made to run doubles and big mileage. I've never run more than a you know, mid 130s in a week. I don't run doubles. The only time I run doubles is if I'm away with work, and so I don't have the family commitments. I sneak an extra run in that evening. But traditional model of running every day per week at least some time, I run generally a Wednesday morning. I'll do a faster session with some intensity, be it 1K reps or mono or 2 minutes or 1 minute, that side of things. I then easy runs on the rest of the week through till Friday. Then I do a longer tempo session. Sometimes you might do a longer 10 or 15K straight or interval reps of, 3 by 4K, etc. And lately that's been targeted around marathon race pace to make sure, or a bit quicker, given that those have been my targets. Recovery on a Saturday and Sunday's a long run, and leading into major races, it normally involves tempo at race pace as well. So anywhere between 5 and 10K at the back end. Really getting used to running fatigued and getting your fueling right and working hard for that. So not too complex, but it's the consistency that I find. And if I'm getting 100K a week throughout the year on average, I'm going pretty well. And leading into a marathon, 110 to 120 is all I need to keep improving at my age and pace.
Yeah, it's a pretty good bang for your buck, really. Like 120K and, to be running sort of mid-230s, it's... it shows you don't always need massive miles. You touched on Melbourne before, that was your PB. And, I guess I saw your training in the lead-up, and I'd say you had a pretty good lead-up. I'd like for you to, give the listeners an idea of what your expectations were going into the race. And although you ran a PB, it certainly wasn't a smooth run.
Yeah, look, it's fair to say that I had high expectations. I've run 4 or 5 marathons in the last 12 months, pursuing some times. I really wanted to get under 240, which I did earlier this year. And to be frank, I was willing to risk blowing up, because I don't have that many left in me in reality where I'm going to reach that peak performance. So I was hitting out at 235, 236 pace, and that was my goal. I wasn't interested in, taking 10 seconds off my 239 PB. I wanted to take a chunk off it, and I was willing to take the risk. I was on track. I was moving well. But I had a bit of a twinge in the hamstring, early in the early kilometres in the race, and sort of ignored it, but felt okay. I was on track at, high 235, low 236 going through halfway. And, whilst I got the PB in the end, it got a bit messy for a while there. I had an unplanned toilet stop, which was essential, and everybody's been there before at some point. And the hamstring actually got a lot worse. So between 21K and 30K, I had 4 stops. I think I averaged going from low 340s to over 4 minutes a K for that 9K. I had a couple 430s in there. I stopped and stretched on a few fences on the far parts of the course. And to be honest, I mentally had given up, because I thought it wasn't my day. The hammy is gone. I'd never done a hammy before. I was a long way from home. There was no other way to get back other than to jog back in. So I started jogging again and started managing the pain, and thought, well, maybe I'll try and pick the pace up, and either the hammy will go and someone will actually have to come and pick me up and take me back to the start line, or things might get better. So, I turned the thinking around that the day was a waste, and thought, I'll see what I can do here. And as I picked up the pace, effectively I had, a significant gap in the middle of the race where I was fully recovered. I was fit enough, and I really went pretty hard from then on in. I started ratcheting down the times. I think the last 10K of the race, I averaged around 3:30, which was a fair bit faster than goal pace. I ignored the watch, didn't worry about anything else, and just pushed as hard as I could and progressively got quicker. And I think all up, my average pace was around 3:43, 3:44, but I ran 3:30s for 10K, and the last... 3 or so K, I was in the 3:20s, I think. So I was really flying home at my pace compared to the real runners. But I got there in the end, and it was really pleasing that I didn't give up completely, and I turned mentally it around and redeemed myself on that day. But in hindsight, I probably left a few minutes out on the course, but that's life. I guess it's a slightly different way to get a PB.
Yeah, and I think that's why we wanted to get you on, because it is a phenomenal story. Like, it does take a lot of mental strength to switch back on. I know for myself, if I was hoping to run, you know, 2:20, which is, you know, 3:20s, and I had a 10-kilometre section there where I was running 3:40s, I would probably just turn it into a Sunday long run. And up until hearing your story, I would have done that, whereas now it's certainly changed my perspective on, you know, you can still get something out of having a bad day. And, you know, you ended up running a PB, which is incredible. And I guess, you know, we wanted the listeners to hear this, that, you know, during a marathon, everybody has a rough patch, and just not to throw in the towel too soon. And I guess what you got out of it as well was, you know, you went through halfway on goal pace, but if you had turned it into a Sunday long run, you would have been going, well, maybe I would have hit the wall at 30K, and maybe I still would have just been that 2:39 athlete. But by actually having a crack, you got a lot more out of it, and you actually proved that, yeah, there are, you know, you're probably sub 2:35 realistically.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's still the hope, that maybe one day I can have a crack at that. But I think you're right. You know, mentally, that's probably what pleases me the most. Things were pretty dark for a little while there. I was pretty much, you know, throwing in the towel, and I thought, well, actually, no, this is my choice. I can see what happens, and I was willing to have a crack. It paid off. There's no doubt about that. But in saying that, I'm not exactly a finely tuned athlete like you. So, you know, to turn it around, it was dropping the pace by 15, 20 seconds. There's a bit more room to do that at my pace compared to yours. But I was pretty pleased that I did, you know, turn it around, and I made the most of it. You know, for me, that was really pleasing. But it also shows that a marathon's a long race, and you're going to have ups and downs, and how your outlook to that, like anything in life, your outlook is what impacts your decision making, and there's always another option.
Yeah. So what's next for you? Have you thought about where you're going to have your crack at sub 2:35?
Yeah, and I'm hoping my wife isn't listening to this, but early next year, perhaps, I'll have another crack. Clearly, I don't think endurance is a limiter for me. I've got to get more speed into my legs. At my age, I've got to get another block of solid 5K type speed and 10K. And given my PBs in the 10K and half are pretty soft, I'm probably going to have a crack at those. But I can assure you, though, it won't be at Canberra Marathon. I've had enough of that course, and it probably won't be Melbourne again either, given the variables with weather we've had over the years. So I haven't worked out exactly where yet, but one more crack, there's definitely one more in me. But mind you guys have heard me say that many times, that every race is my last, but I'll keep coming back for more.
Well, actually, it's funny you say that, because Melbourne Marathon, I was over in Seville, and it was about 11 o'clock at night, and I was getting the live splits every 5K, and chatting to a couple of mates back here who weren't racing, and we're like, oh yeah, Trav's on pace through halfway, and then we saw you drop basically 20 seconds a K for the next K, and we're like, oh, hopefully it's an error on the Melbourne Marathon site, and because we thought, oh yeah, Trav will be in retirement for the next week after this, but yeah, it was amazing to see you come back. I guess, what's the most memorable race you've ever had, or, you know?
Yeah, there's probably been a few. I never thought I'd get my 5K down to 16:16. That, to me, was always a sort of a time to get into the 16s that low was by genuinely fast people, so I'm pretty happy with that. Probably one of my greatest memories is not running related, although I was on the back of a run, was qualifying for Kona in Ironman New Zealand. I ran basically a 3-hour flat marathon off the bike and mowed down a lot of people and had a really good day, which got me to Kona, which is one of my great goals in life, to go do the Hawaiian Ironman. And doing that race, I sort of treated Hawaii like a bit of a victory lap, and I loved it. I went around in 9:57, smiling the whole way, just having an absolute blast. So that's a really happy memory for me. And more recently, definitely, you know, I'm happy that I was able to pull it out in Melbourne from a bad situation. But it just goes to show that, you know, there's a lot of opportunities out there, and there's always another race. There's always a lot of people faster than you, but there's always a lot of opportunities to get faster too. So, you know, those races have been important, and they're nice reflections. But again, you know, as a punter, they're good fun, and it's just a part of life. And I'm glad to have been able to, you know, live and been lucky enough to do those things.
Yeah. That's pretty much all the questions I had, but. We just wanted to get you on because we thought a lot of the listeners could relate to you in terms of full-time work and family, whereas I guess Julian, Brady and myself, you know, don't have, we obviously have the full-time work but not the family side of things. So, hopefully the listeners get something out of it. There's certainly some pearls of wisdom in there. And where can the listeners actually follow your progress? I know you're not big into the social media, but if people want to follow your running progress, how can they follow you?
I'm not big on socials, so I'd say for all of the people that follow you, most times on a Sunday long run, I tend to track with you, and you'll see it on Strava, and as I do my best to not get dropped by you too often. I'm not big on that. I just find those sort of things a distraction, and I have enough distractions in my life, so adding to social media through Facebook or anything like that doesn't work for me. Strava, I do admit that I do enjoy that, and I like to see your sessions and a few of the other boys, which I look at on the quiet. And thanks for the opportunity to have a chat, and more importantly, thanks for buying me a beer.
No worries. Thanks for your time, and I'm no Brady Trelfall, but I think we did okay.
All of you have done a great job. It's a great way to make the runs go by for when I'm doing the Dad Run Club solo in the dark. Listening to you boys in the interviews has been great. And obviously it didn't go well for you leading into Berlin, but having seen your training, your commitment, I know big things are ahead for you. So thanks to the guys and you for what you're doing. It's a lot of fun.
Cool. Thanks, Trav.
Blackbird in my veins. I found out when I was just a child that your skin can bring you so much pain. Now I hear you say you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes and tell me if you take my place? On the shoulder of my skin. Doesn't matter if it don't come back. Oh, no.